All right, well, I'd like to welcome everybody participating in today's webinar, Luck of the Audit, the Role of Internal Controls in Audit Preparedness. My name is Mac Lillard. I'm a senior manager with GRF in the Risk Advisory Services Department. So I spend the majority of my day-to-day helping our clients with internal audit services, fraud and forensic accounting, cybersecurity and IT control, and just general risk management practices. So I'll be here to speak largely to the IT component of the audit and internal controls, but I'm happy to field any additional questions you all may have. But with that, I'll turn things over to Allison to introduce herself.
Great. Thanks, Max. Thanks, Max. Hi, good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Allison Conklin, and I'm a senior manager in the audit department at GRF. And I've spent my career working in GRF's audit department, primarily working with nonprofit organizations, so those C3, C4, C6s, as well as working with international NGOs across the world. And then I'll happy to turn it over to Tricia.
Good morning, everybody. We are so happy that you're here to join us this morning for our webinar to talk about some of these audit common findings that we come up with during our process. I'm Tricia Cattabini. I'm a partner with the audit department here at GRF CPAs and Advisors. I've been in practice for about 17 and a half years at this point, primarily focusing my time on not-for-profits, specifically the association and the C3, C4 world. So that's kind of my niche. We're happy to talk through. Please, as you go through, feel free to chat us, ask us any questions. We are happy to stop and answer them as we go along.
All right, thank you both. Please note that this webinar is not intended as financial or legal advice. This is simply for educational purposes. So as mentioned, we are GRF CPAs and Advisors. We're based out of Bethesda, Maryland, and we serve clients in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, as well as nationally and internationally. Our firm serves a wide range of clients covering not-for-profit organizations, for-profit companies, schools, government contractors, associations, and others. However, our particular niche is within the not-for-profit and INGO space. We've been in operations for several decades, and in 2021, we actually celebrated our 40-year anniversary. So as you can see on this next slide, we do have a lot of areas of expertise. We started out as a traditional audit and tax firm providing bookkeeping services and outsourced advisory services. And over our 40 plus year history, we have really expanded to provide any kind of level of service that a growing not-for-profit or INGO would need. So expanding into those areas like enterprise risk management, internal auditing, fraud and forensic accounting, accounting technology solutions, looking at ways to digitally and financially transform our clients, and then also looking at information technology and cybersecurity controls to make sure our clients are doing whatever they can to protect their data and the data of the participants and the individuals that they serve. So again, if you have any questions over any of these other service areas, we'd definitely recommend reaching out to one of your audit partners or another member of the firm with any inquiries that you have. But with that, I'll turn things over to Allison to go through our agenda items for today.
Great. So yeah, let's jump in and talk about the agenda and the talking points for the next hour of this session. So first, we'll start by talking about why an organization may undergo an audit and the different types of an audit you can get. And then we'll talk about what to expect during an audit and how we think an organization could properly plan for an audit process. And then we'll touch on some common audit findings that we as auditors have been seeing lately. And this will include a series of findings related to, you know, a basic financial statement audit, as well as some IT information technology findings that have come out, and Mac will touch upon those areas. And then we'll also talk about some common findings that we're seeing with the single audit. So those uniform guidance audits for organizations that receive federal funding. And then lastly, we'll talk on some best practice recommendations that we think, you know, organizations could benefit from hearing our side as auditors. So let's start with the audit types. So there's a couple of audit types up here on this screen that we want to talk through and everything. And, you know, there's a magnitude of different types of an audit and different reasons why organizations may get an audit. But again, The ones that are listed up here are the more common reasons that we are seeing. And so first, an organization may have either a state or federal legal requirement to get an audit, right? So states may require nonprofits to submit their audited financials when they're trying to get their charitable registration status with the government. And then there also may be filing requirements for organizations that receive a certain amount of revenue in a given year. So really this can be dependent on any state's criteria and what may, you know, ultimately mandate a requirement audit for financial statements. And then there could be federal requirements as well for organizations that receive federal funding from any government source. So federal, local, state, you know, they may have different criteria based on the funding source. So, but if an organization does receive more than or expend more than $750,000 of federal funds in any given fiscal year, then they'll be required to obtain a single audit, also known as a uniform guidance. And we'll touch upon more about this in the later slides. And then we also have funding from foundations and other entities listed up here. So another reason organizations may obtain an audit is for grant funding from private foundations or other entities. And we see a lot of private foundations ask for copies of nonprofits' latest financial statements when, you know, nonprofits go to seek funding or seek a proposal. And so if an organization does receive a grant, you know, the grantor could require, you know, financial statements, audited financial statements as part of the terms of that grant. So there's a reason why, you know, organizations may seek out, audits for foundations. And, you know, basically they want to have transparency, right? So many will consider funding only nonprofits that, you know, they consider financially responsible. And an audit report validates, you know, internal controls as well as the financial statements. And so establishing that degree of financial responsibility in turn could then expand, you know, the number of grants that an organization could receive. So then the next two that we have up here are governance due diligence and transparency for donors. So I think we can all agree that financial, you know, statement audits can be a cumbersome process, and it requires time and resources and a lot of effort that goes into making sure that an audit process goes off smoothly. And so the results of an audit can also be proven to be valuable to an organization. So an organization wants to make itself look transparent. And by presenting their financial statements that are audited to donors or members or sponsors, you know, that could put a little more confidence in those third parties and making sure that the organizations are properly spending the funds that they receive from them, you know, making sure that they're in accordance with the donor's intent and everything. So there's a little bit more, you know, confidence that can come out of an audit process for grantors or donors or sponsors. And then additionally, simply put, you know, an audit process could provide opportunities for improvements and efficiencies in the organization. You know, having a third-party audit firm come in and look at your organization's financial statements and internal controls, as well as policies and procedures governing the organization, it could help identify mistakes, omissions, you know, overspending, inefficiencies, other issues, or things that, you know, simply might just be missed by management looking at those financial statements. So by having someone outside of your organization come in, it could provide, you know, additional perspectives and encourage, you know, organizational growth within the organization.
Yeah, and Allison, one thing I really want to touch on is that these are a lot of great points for why an organization obtains an audit when there's a specific requirement around them, whether it's a legal requirement, whether your board is requiring it. But we've actually seen a lot of organizations here lately where management wants to have their financial statements audited, which is great from a transparency perspective. Maybe their board doesn't require, but management wants to ensure that their fiduciary responsibility as they oversee the organization from a day-to-day perspective is really operating well. So I think that's also one area where we are starting to see a lot more, fruition coming from other people within the organization, aside from what we see from a requirement perspective for an audit. So again, ensuring that if you are running an organization, if you are managing a not-for-profit, really best practice recommendation is to obtain that audit, because you may not fall into these buckets. One of those big types of organizations that may not are simply 56 associations, right? A lot of times they're not required to get an audit. Sometimes the board doesn't necessarily look for that either. So a lot of the CEOs, COOs that I'm starting to talk with are like, it's really best practice for us to do this. We really should be doing it from a year-to-year perspective. And it's been 4, 5, 6 years sometimes when we get them into our door and engage with them since they've had that last audit. And they're starting to see really the benefit of having that on an annual basis. So from our perspective, again, you know, we're going to talk about best practice recommendations from an audit perspective, a process perspective, but really best practice overall is to obtain an audit for your organization.
So let's talk about some different types of an audit that you can get. So first, we have your basic financial statement audit, and this is an examination of an organization's financial statements to issue an opinion on whether the financial statements are presented fairly in accordance with accounting principles generally accepted in the United States. Then we also have a single audit, so uniform guidance audits for organizations that receive and spend more than $750,000 in federal funds in any given fiscal year. And this type of audit would include your basic financial statement audit, as well as a compliance examination over the federal awards. And an auditor would then render an opinion on an organization's compliance requirements with respect to the major programs. So it's kind of a two-part series there with the single audits. Then we have compliance audits that you can get. And compliance audits are mainly examining the processes and policies of a business or a specific department in an organization. So the aim really here is to check whether the business is compliant with regulatory or internal standards. And then we have employee benefit plan audits. And these audits relate to an organization's 401k plan, a pension, or profit sharing plan. And they're intended to provide assurance that the plan in place is compliant with applicable laws and regulations, DOL, and make sure ultimately that the plan will be able to fund the future benefits to the participants, you know, that are participating in the plan. And organizations that have more than 100 eligible participants to a plan would be required to undergo this type of audit. And then lastly on the screen, we have internal audits. And I'm actually going to turn it over to Mac to talk about that in a little bit more detail.
Thanks, Allison. Just to start off, just wanted to go through kind of the basics of the difference between internal and external audit. As Allison just covered on that last slide, external auditing looks at the accuracy of a company's financial statements and whether its accounting practices comply with the applicable rules and regulations, generally accepted accounting principles in the United States, or potentially single audit or other standards. The auditor also verifies that the financial reports and records offer an accurate picture of the company's performance. Whereas internal auditing, the overall goal of internal auditing is to make a company more efficient, more profitable, and better at making key decisions. So overall, in terms of the process for an internal or external audit, generally speaking, the process is very similar in terms of you have your planning and information gathering phases. You have your field work where you perform the majority of the testing, interviews, compilation of all of your support for any of the recommendations or findings. Then you have your reporting and follow-up and your monitoring and evaluation. So in terms of the engagements themselves, not too different of a process, but the scope and objectives are where internal and external auditing really differ. So for example, as far as an internal audit goes, a company could order an internal audit of its procurement practice. The auditor would look at the system for tracking procurement activity, that being either the accounting system or an AP or requisition system, or for certain organizations, you may actually have a specific system for procurement. So the auditor would leverage that system, use that to determine if the procurement transactions were performed in accordance with defined policies and procedures. And that aspect of the internal audit would not be very different from the external audit. If, again, you do undergo a single audit or you have procurement that's tested as part of your external audit process, we would be doing similar procedures to make sure that everything's being done in accordance with policy, procedure, regulatory frameworks, and best practice. Where an internal audit would dive a little bit deeper would actually be to look at the processes themselves as opposed to simply compliance with the overall policy. So we would look at the process to determine where there are potential bottlenecks, pain points within the process or within the system, and we would try to identify ways to correct these issues Whether that be aimed at trying to streamline the process, to reduce processing time, whether that's looking to improve control mechanisms, or if it's just trying to identify where these issues are occurring so that we can provide additional clarity to staff who are involved in the process. Again, the specific scope and objectives may differ depending on the different objectives and what the client or the group is trying to get out of that assessment. So just talking about the structure of internal audit, internal auditors or the internal audit department can be employees of the company. They can also be outsourced providers, whether that's under a co-sourcing agreement where the external internal auditor firm is working hand in hand with management to administer the internal audit plan, or they can be fully outsourced providers where the outsourced provider is actually developing the internal audit plan, performing all of the procedures, and reporting to the board of directors. So speaking of that, in its truest form, or in accordance with the IIA standards, the internal audit department is independent and objective, meaning that they report to the board of directors as opposed to management. While they do work with management to perform all of their internal audit procedures, ultimately their end reporting responsibility is to the board of directors.
I think one of the other key highlights too, Mac, is really the differences in the internal audit and kind of the organizations that typically get internal audits, right? So when we look at our composition of our clients, I am not asking my C3 organizations with $5 million, one location to necessarily get an internal audit performed unless there is some kind of a risk that we deem to be a little bit higher. A lot of times we see our organizations who are international, not-for-profit global organizations. They are the ones that really have an internal audit flow and process that is on an annual basis and is consistent. The federal government, for instance, also has an internal audit process as well. Are there any other types of organizations you typically see getting internal audits performed?
No, I think you really covered the bases there. And that kind of does lead me to one of the cons of internal auditing, in that it obviously does have cost considerations. It does distract from the normal day-to-day operations of the individuals who are responsible for providing documentation or meeting with management. It does serve as a potential distraction, but again, we do feel that in most instances, the benefits far outweigh the disadvantages or the issues encountered for it during an internal audit. And Tricia, you made a great point about, the organizations you see engaging in these types of assessments or internal audits, that they are typically larger organizations that have that budget flexibility, have that need. But you also mentioned, in the event that a particular organization or a client of yours sees a particular risk that is higher than others, that is, at the heart of internal audit, it is a risk-based approach. So it is served or aimed at the purpose of mitigating potential risks to the organization. You can mitigate risks through process improvement, streamlining of operations, additional control mechanisms, but ultimately you are trying to mitigate some sort of risk as a result of that internal audit. That is typically one of the objectives. So to your point, Tricia, as far as organizations we see that typically engage in internal audit, those would be ones that have a higher risk profile depending on the areas that they operate in, the size of their operations. Obviously, the larger an organization gets, the more complex it gets, the more stakeholders there are, the more areas where there are opportunities for bottlenecks or pain points and things like that. So you do typically see formal internal audit departments or internal audit engagements being performed at larger organizations who, again, have that budget flexibility. But just because something is, referred to as an internal audit doesn't mean that other organizations aren't doing this. It may just not be referred to as a formal internal audit because, again, in its truest form, in accordance with the standards, an internal audit is reported to the board of directors. It is independent and objective, but you can still do an internal assessment, leveraging your skills, knowledge, and expertise in-house. Again, if you identify a particular risk area that you feel needs deeper analysis, it may not be a formal internal audit, but it can be a particular scoped out assessment or review, risk review, whatever you want to call it internally, that serves the same purpose as an internal audit. So again, did want to make that delineation just kind of in between the terminology there. But yeah, I did, you know, just wanted to touch on a couple again of the pros and cons since we started talking about that. But in terms of the pros of internal audit, it really does help provide enhanced decision making. Again, it provides a deeper analysis into some of the pain points and bottlenecks within certain processes. It also is done in conjunction with the strategic plan. So ultimately, the internal audit should be planned and defined in a way that it is going to ultimately support the strategic plan or the strategic objectives of the organization. So tying in the risk mitigation to how this supports the overall strategic plan and critical business processes is really important to just, again, improving the decision-making capacity at the organization. Also, just generally speaking, improves operations and efficiencies. Again, as we mentioned, you know, most often internal audits are designed for the purpose of process improvement, finding ways to financially or digitally transform, mitigate any kind of issues within key business practices. So again, it just helps the organization to operate more efficiently, effectively, at lower costs, reducing manual labor. Also helps to define and mitigate those risks. Again, part of the internal audit process is performing an actual risk assessment to understand the risk universe or the risk profile of the organization. And from that risk assessment, you then develop your internal plan and your testing procedures based on your prioritized risk ranking. So it helps you to define and mitigate the risk that could potentially pose the biggest liability or the biggest potential disruption should an unforeseen risk event occur. And then, like the team had already alluded to, it helps to ensure compliance and success in your external audits. If you're doing things throughout the year to make sure that your controls are in place and operating effectively, ultimately, when your external auditor comes in, they will hopefully find the same thing because you have been continuously auditing and monitoring it throughout the year. But with that, I will turn things, I think, back over to Allison.
Great. So yeah, let's start before we start with the common audit findings that we're seeing. Let's start talking about what to expect during an audit. Because a lot of times, you know, we get the questions in an audit process why we're doing something. You know, they don't understand, management might not understand why we're doing something for the audit. So let's start with the pre-audit meeting. Typically, auditors will start with having a pre-audit meeting prior to fieldwork commencing. And this could be held with management or governance. But basically, the idea is to talk about the organization's activities for the year under audit. And we want to know any significant changes that happened during the fiscal year from either the prior year or historically. We want to know about any staffing changes, any program, you know, any new programs, any programs that ended. We're concerned with any issues or, you know, other matters that might have affected the organization under the period of audit, as well as subsequently through the date that our audit is performed. Because ultimately, all of this affects our risk analysis. When we're going in and trying to properly plan for an audit, we need to know this information so that we can, you know, ensure that we're covering either the riskier areas or, you know, areas that might just be new to your organization. We want to make sure that we're getting our comfort letter, comfort matter, you know, in order to issue an opinion on your financial statements. So that's probably the first area that auditors would focus. Then we would start talking and making inquiries with management and other firm personnel. And this is really where a lot of our, you know, organizations that we audit come in and, you know, kind of ask us why we're, you know, basically talking to other personnel in the organization. And this matters because, you know, we're going to do our due diligence and ask, you know, inquiries of your finance department, you know, making sure accountants and, you know, everyone that is handling the financial statements and giving us their data, we're making sure that we're asking them about, you know, any fraud, you know, any issues or anything like that. But then we're also on the back end, we want to talk to different departments in your organization, right? So we want to talk to, you know, if you're a membership organization, we'd like to talk to your membership director. You know, if they're your compliance, you know, we want to talk to program people, you know, grant people, you know, different personnel people, because we want to get a feel of how, you know, different departments are connecting in your organization. Because ultimately, you know, those people might not be producing the reports that we're looking at for the audit, but they do, you know, play a critical role in driving those numbers that go to the finance department. So membership coordinator, we want to know the internal controls about that, you know, about that department in your organization. We want to speak to that person. We want to speak to the program people, and we want to get a feel for how things are operating. And then we have test of account balances and review of internal controls. So we'll most likely ask for, you know, many different things in the audit process. We'll want to see policy documents, financial statements, accounting records, and other things, you know, things that play a critical role in us examining your financial records, ultimately, again, to render that opinion on your financial statements. And then we'll also look into your internal controls. We'll want to see, you know, the processes in place, the reviews and approvals. We'll want to make sure things are being properly done and documented so that we can verify that those, you know, controls are operating. And then ultimately at the end, you know, we'll have the deliverables. So once we've obtained, you know, reasonable assurance that your financial statements are presented fairly, and no material misstatement exists, then we'll render our opinion and deliver the reports to governance. And also I want to highlight, you know, management's responsibility for the financial statements, because sometimes, you know, this gets a little mixed in with, you know, auditors and whatnot. And I want to point out that management is really responsible for the internal controls of the organization. So they're responsible for designing, for implementing, and, you know, ultimately making sure those internal controls are in place. We as auditors obviously cannot do that. You know, we cannot, you know, make a policy or define your organization's policies. So when we're coming in for the audit, we have to know that background information of your organization and make sure, you know, that ultimately we're seeing that throughout our audit process.
Allison, before you move on to the next slide, one of the other things I just wanted to kind of touch on when you talked about the test of account balances is to, just as a reminder, we do not test 100% of everything. We do sample. And that sample is based on, as Allison already mentioned, our risk assessment process and procedures. One of the most common, I think, complaints, I guess I would call it a complaint that I hear, is when I have a new client transition to GRF, and there's always a commentary, well, I didn't ever get so much requests from our prior auditor. Bear in mind that prior auditors, if you do transition to a new auditor, successor auditor, they don't necessarily understand your organization. They don't understand your internal control process or procedure. They don't understand how things are recorded within your financial statements until they dive in. So really that first year is likely going to feel like a heavy lift as you transition, as we get to know you, as we understand where the risks are and where they may lie within your financial statements, and as we kind of hone in a little bit more year over year. So hopefully the lift is heavy in year one, and then as we get into it, it becomes a little bit less. Of course, if we do continue to see those risks at a heightened level, we will continue to ask for that additional support. So I just wanted to kind of highlight and touch on that as well.
All right, so we have our first polling question. So if you could please take a minute to just answer this question. All right, so we can move on with some common audit findings. So let's start with some common audit findings that we're seeing surrounding a basic financial statement audit. And so the first one we have up here is lack of formal accounting policies and procedures. So a lot of times organizations, you know, they might not have a formal, you know, set of policies and procedures defining their accounting principles that they're using, you know, making sure that transactions are applied consistently. And so when we're going into an audit process, we need to make sure that we are looking at your formal accounting policies and procedures manual. And it has to have, you know, the policies, you know, in place, you know, and everything that's governing how you are recording transactions. And ultimately, if, you know, you want to have the financial reports that are governed in that manual, ultimately to give to management and governance. So a well-written accounting manual aids in, you know, training new employees, as well as in assisting on the segregation of duties. So a completed manual needs to be reviewed, you know, and formally approved by governance. And a lot of times what we're seeing in audits is that, you know, if an organization has a formal policy, you know, an accounting manual in place, it could be outdated, right? So, you know, it could be from 2018, and a lot of things have changed, you know, within the last several years, right? We had the pandemic. And so that, you know, kind of shifted a lot of organizations into, you know, the remote world. And so maybe policies, you know, kind of tended to shift off and, you know, different